You're listening to the OT's Gone Rogue podcast, where we inspire therapists to think outside the box and do things differently. I'm your host, Melissa Lapointe. My passion is in helping OT entrepreneurs have a bigger impact on the world while building a life they love and doing transformative work that lights them up. On each episode of the show, I'm going to share tools and tricks to help you flex your entrepreneurial muscles and grow your business from the inside out. I want to see more OTs step up as visionary leaders, change makers, and influential CEOs. So let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the OTs Gone Rogue podcast. Today's episode is particularly exciting because we are getting back into the groove with spotlighting other amazing OTs who are on this journey of going rogue. And let me tell you that the lineup of OTs we are featuring in 2023 is nothing short of amazing. So we are kicking things off with none other than Sarah Lyon from OT Potential. Sarah's an OT based out of Aurora, Nebraska. In 2011, she launched OT Potential because she realized the incredible need for a reliable source of quality occupational therapy-related content and resources. As you're going to hear in this interview, Sarah is now on a mission. Through her OT Potential platform, she has a blog, she has a podcast, and she has a membership-based journal club, all geared towards helping OT practitioners from around the globe to make a habit of regularly exploring new OT-related research. Later this month, she's also launching an OT directory, which we talk more about. And let me tell you, I don't think I've ever been so excited to get my name on an OT directory before. Tune into the full episode, and you're going to hear us sharing more about her journey of going rogue, including how she navigates work-life balance when working from home and when partnering with her husband. You're going to hear her share about her decision to be a generalist, so intentionally not niching down, and she talks about the importance of having a platform that shines a spotlight on other OTs. Sarah and I chat about how she's managing the pressure of having so many eyes on her work. And of course, I get her to share the long-term vision for OT Potential. So without further ado, let's roll out this interview with Sarah Lyon. All right, Sarah, this has been a long time coming. Mm-hmm. Before we hit record, we were both laughing about this being our first video call, which feels very strange because we both feel like we've known each other for a number of years now.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt so connected to you for so long. And also right before we hit record, I was asking you, like, following up on an event in your life that happened 5 years ago. So that to me tells me how long we've been connected.
Yeah. Well, and it goes to show the interconnectedness of the OT profession. And that's such a big part of the work that you're mm-hmm. doing, which we're going to get into here in a moment. But it's such a big world, yet it's not, especially with the transition into the online space. There have been a lot of great things to come with this, you know, era of being in the internet and the connections that we have. Is that in part, okay, I want to ask if that's in part what motivated you to do the work that you do, but let's back up and tell people a little bit more about the work that you do. So tell me a little bit about how you are connected to the OT profession and where you are geographically in this world.
Yes, I am in Nebraska in the United States. So I'm right in the middle of the United States. I'm in a small town and I run OT Potential. And this is a website where the heart of it is our OT Potential Club, where we review new research that is coming out. And we do both written reviews and discussions of that. And then we have a podcast where we invite expert guests to talk about that research. And part of the fun of that, to your point, is when we're looking at research, our research that's out there about OT is so global. So it feels like all the time we're looking at research that has been generated from all over the world. And we have members from like 40 or 50 countries in our club. That's like my, that's my favorite part about my work is that it is that global and connected.
Love that. How did this all come about? Was this an idea that was percolating for a while? Was it just something that one day kind of hit you on the side of the head, an opportunity came knocking and you were like, yes, this is what I want to do. Tell me more, because this is a little bit of a diversion from what we learned in OT school.
I think for me, it started with seeing a problem and I had no idea what the solution was. And for me, that problem was I went to OT school in New York City. I graduated, I came back to Nebraska, so half a continent away. I felt very disconnected from my OT network and all the resources. This was 10 years ago, and like we went to libraries a lot more. So I felt physically disconnected from my resources. And I'm a new practitioner. I'm working in the small town that I grew up in. And I'm seeing patients. I remember specifically seeing someone with MS. And it's someone I've known my whole life. I want to give him the best OT care and feeling really frustrated that I was like, I just got out of school and I don't know how to find what is the best OT care for MS. Like, I feel like I don't have the resources. I remember calling one of my friends who was working at an MS clinic and just feeling like I knew there was information out there and I didn't have access to it. And I was like, we're all doing our own things in these little, but we're all siloed. So that was the problem that I saw and had no idea how to fix that. And what I did was I just started a blog, I think mostly as a way to like stay in connection with my OT friends. And that grew. I don't know how long you want this story to be. Should I just keep going?
Keep going.
Okay. I'll try to tell abbreviated. That blog grew, over 5 years. And I became an affiliate with different rehab companies and I started generating this income. And before I knew it, I had a full-time income that was being generated by my blog. So I kind of hit this like crossroads of like, okay, this can be a full-time thing, but what exactly do I want that to look like? So I think of that as like part one of my business, just like growing that blog and getting that sustainable income. And then kind of part two, the main thing that happened for me was like in my business, I was looking at like, what's next? How do I achieve this mission that I set out of like connecting people with best practices? And then in my personal life, I had my second child and I got done breastfeeding and I was slammed all of a sudden with dizziness every single day. I would get up in the morning, I would run to the bathroom and dry heave. I would be dizzy all morning. Usually I would take a nap because I'd be so exhausted and then I'd be dizzy into the afternoon and then it would get a little better in the evening and then cycle back. And I went to so many doctors and so many specialists, no answers. People made me feel awful. You would have to like wait 3 months to see someone and then you would see them and they would just make you feel awful. And through the help of just like my generalist, I've seen a PA at the time and she connected me with some literature around POTS. And I was like, this sounds exactly what I'm going through. And I found a research article that had this protocol for POTS patients to follow. And I followed that and I felt relief within months.
Wow.
So for me, it was this eye-opening, like, there was a research article that had an answer for me and none of my healthcare practitioners like had read this or could connect me with it, but like the answer was there. So that's when I got really in my business then became really focused and passionate about, I want to find the most important research that's coming out in our profession and I want to make it more accessible to OTs. So that correlated with the club starting. And now I can't remember if I'm headed into 4 or 5 years. So that started like phase two of my business, basically.
This ties into just listening to your story and so much of your why. Before we hit record, you had asked me how my son was doing in terms of his recovery with his brain tumor, and I'm comfortable sharing that. But part of our journey was when he first started showing symptoms, my family physician, getting him in, you know, it was a 3-month wait list to see the pediatrician. Now it's an 18-month or up to 24-month wait list to see our pediatrician. At the time, it was 3 months. And there were so many significant symptoms that were happening that were red flags for me from a sensory standpoint, that were red flags for me from a pediatric therapist standpoint. But the first place that I reached out to were my pediatric OT colleagues. And again, different research articles, different information. It was shared with me. So when I went into that first appointment with our family physician, I had printed off several research articles on what I thought this may be based on the clinical reasoning. You know, I was tapping into different pediatric OT groups, and it empowered me in a different way, where I had the language, I had the research articles highlighted. These are the symptoms that I'm seeing. These are, you know, I want a referral to a developmental ophthalmologist to rule this out, and I want a referral here. And I went in with such a different level of assertiveness that there wasn't, and I acknowledge my privilege in that situation, because a lot of people were like, oh, you need to be the best advocate for your child, and if the health professionals don't listen to you, it's like, honestly, that wasn't my experience. They listened to me very quickly. They jumped. And I think in part, it was because I went in with so much of that research. And again, that was my, you know, I went to my colleagues. I went to the different groups, and the questions they were asking. And now, full disclosure, I pretended it was a client. I didn't say it was my son, because I wasn't ready to share that information about my private life. I was still processing. But I said, you know, here's the situation. Here is my client, and gave a little bit of a synopsis of what we were dealing with. And we have a lot of really smart people in the OT profession.
Yeah. Oh, and I've never heard anyone articulate it as well as you did, but that power of having that article to back up what you're saying. I agree. There is something really powerful, whether you're a patient coming in with an article or you're the OT practitioner who's like, here's what I'm thinking because I read this and this is informing my clinical reasoning on it. Yeah, that's it changes how people respond to you, for sure.
It does. It does. To circle back, are you still practice? Is this your full-time? Now, it was your full-time thing quite a while ago. It sounds like it may be more than that at this point, but are you still doing any type of clinical work? Are you doing any type of community-based work, or are you all in on the OT potential?
I am all in, and I have been for 5 years. And honestly, that's my big sadness and how I feel like I differ from lots of entrepreneurs, because that was not my plan to not work clinically. I love clinical work. I think about going back a lot, but I just, with young kids and the work the website took, I felt like I was at a crossroads and had to choose.
Yeah, I understand that. Did you resonate with the term entrepreneur early on, or did it take a little while for you to be comfortable with stepping into that role and proudly wearing that entrepreneur title?
Yeah. In my undergrad, I was a double major, religion and economics. So I definitely had this like businessy background. And I remember really early on seeing how much work it took to run a blog and being like, well, this needs to be a business venture because it's so much work. Like, I want it to be sustainable. And for me, I was like, I know it won't be sustainable if I'm not generating income from it. Probably like a year or so in, was just a realization of like, if I want to keep doing this, I have to be an entrepreneur.
And now you don't just have the blog, but you also have the podcast. So how far into your blogging did you also decide to co-create the podcast to go alongside that?
Mm-hmm. In part two of my business, when I launched the club, what we did initially was, and I still do this part, each year I pull a list of the most cited journal articles that mention occupational therapy from the past 5 years. And we just kind of work our way through that list. And what I did when we first started was I would review one article per week. But we were going through these huge topics really quickly, and people gave me feedback that it'd be nice to spend 2 weeks on a topic. I was getting that feedback. And then I was also observing, I was like, people are investing a lot of time in learning this research for our OTs in the US. They deserve to be getting CEU credit. And so the idea of launching the podcast where we found a guest to talk about that featured research came to be because first we get that expert to weigh in, and second, that allowed me to package the learning in a way where it could be approved as a continuing education course.
And that in and of itself is a whole process.
That's its own process. Yes, for sure.
Yes. I've looked at, you know, I've gone through, it's been on my bucket list for a while, is to get through that AOTA CEU approved provider application. And then I was consulting with a business. So they were physiotherapists, and I was consulting with them for a year around there. And that was a big part of their revenue stream, was the CEU approved work that they were incorporating into their program. And I got to see behind the scenes of what was involved.
It's a ton of work. Yep. And for anyone who's thinking about that, this, don't put off looking at that application, because the sooner you look at it, the sooner the better, because they want you to do like a needs assessment of why you're becoming a continue of your topic. And that's easier to do early on. Like, I've had people launch the course and then look at getting it approved retroactively. And that's harder because you can't go back in time and do that needs assessment. Look at it sooner rather than later.
Well, and I found it, you know, even from an adult education standpoint, there were some really good tips and tools in that application process that whether you are CEU approved or not, there are always things that you can do. And we'll speak about this here in a moment, but in terms of the tech side, and yes, sales and marketing, that's a huge piece of it. But when you are creating that content and how you are delivering that content and to accommodate the different learning styles in an online space, there are a lot of things to think about. And what I didn't have in my earlier courses that I'm now working on integrating was that certificate of completion. And people were asking for it. And I'm like, well, I don't know if you completed it or not. We didn't have quizzes and assignments at the end of each module. I was just so focused on getting the content actually created. I didn't even think of that part. And I mean, earlier, gosh, it was 2015 with my first online course. Those certificates of completion, the quizzes, the assignments, the learning platforms that we were using weren't as advanced as they are now. It's much easier for me to set that up because we've seen so many advances in the online course, the online learning industry. But it gave me a lot of food for thought in terms of how I'm delivering my program and how I can improve my program. And having it, it's so hard to make things linear, but there needs to be some process in how people are going through and experiencing that customer, you know, that customer journey. It definitely, even though I'm not there yet in the application, I still learned a lot.
It makes you think through the different aspects of it for sure.
So did you always consider yourself somewhat tech savvy, or was there a big learning curve for you in venturing into this online space with your blog, with your podcast, with the club?
I'm really lucky because I have a tech savvy spouse, which I am learning lots of OT entrepreneurs have a tech savvy spouse. So he helped me and with a lot of that early on. And now we actually work together we're both full-time on the business. So my initial response in my head was like, oh, I'm still not tech savvy. I've gotten to a place where I can rely on someone to help me with a lot of the technical things.
Neat. And so important. So it sounds like you've both worked at understanding your strengths and your different roles within the business.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was that a learning curve in terms of differentiating those roles with a spouse and working with a spouse where you don't just end your workday and get a break from your team?
I think differentiating our roles in our business was really easy and natural because we have, like, I bring the clinical skill set and he brings the technical skill set. But then when we were both working from home, the harder part was, like, we had to have explicit conversations about our roles in the home and who's kind of taking the lead on what. Extended throughout our whole, like, the work part was the easy part. Thinking through, like, our whole day of, like, what happens when we're together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Who takes the lead on what?
Yes. So do you have a typical week in your business or a typical month? How do you... tell me about your approach to scheduling your day, your week, because I can imagine if you don't have clear boundaries that can turn into, that can turn into a little bit of a struggle and has potential to lead to burnout, but also some stress on your relationship.
Yeah. We have a super structured schedule. We're on like a 2 week rotation. One week where I've identified the research and I'm writing an overview of it to share in the club, and we submit the course to the AOTA. That all happens in 1 week. And then the following week, we record the podcast and do a lot of the marketing stuff. And we just have a checklist that we work through for each of those 2 weeks. And I'm very lucky to have an office person who comes in the morning 3 days a week. And that just kind of spices up our time and is a huge part of our, I want to use the word sanity, huge part of our sanity, I'll just say.
Yeah. So do you have consistent work hours?
For sure. My husband takes the kids to school. We're down here by 8:30. Take a lunch, and then we're done by 4:30 or 5. I've never been one of the entrepreneurs that can burn the midnight oil. That is not my skill set. So especially as the business has grown and I've gotten to choose the schedule more, it's really in that traditional work time, which goes back to, like, I love the traditional clinical work schedule. That's just a great fit for my personality. So I've replicated it in my home a lot.
Oh, we have so many similarities, but so many differences. It's something I strive towards, but the reality is there are times that I'm a night hawk and I can get into a flow in the evenings, and my husband does a swing shift schedule. So that changes every 2 weeks for us. And,
the norm in the entrepreneurial world. There's a lot of night hawks out there.
It's tough. And especially in the wintertime. So full disclosure, I need more hobbies. You know, my husband and my son are both more introverted and they really enjoy their downtime, and I need to be cognitively stimulated a lot, and it's either going to be annoying them or going off in my own world and doing my thing. And I think sometimes they appreciate that I just go off and they want to watch a movie,
like,
and
gone.
Even sitting through a movie, it's tough for me to sit through a whole movie. And often halfway through, I'll just, quietly pull up my laptop and do a little bit of work or play on Canva and get some things updated. My attention is a little bit all over, but I want to be there with them because that is their interest. That is what they want to do. Mm-hmm. So how can I get the best of both worlds where I'm not just going off in my room and reading? And sometimes I do, I need that time too, but it's a balance, and it's still, and it's, a stage of life that we're in. And I also, someone said, why have you ever thought about getting an office? And I have my dog, and that's for me, like he's my other fur baby. Well, he's my baby, but you know, he's with me all the time. Like, well, I don't, what would I do with my dog? And could he come with me? And how would I then run home to take him for the walks that he needs to go on? And what would that look like? And yeah, I've had my, you know, separate office space before, and it was a lot of overhead financially, but emotionally, you know, going in and making sure my plants weren't dying and cleaning and organizing. And we just decided to simplify our lives and bring everything home. But yeah, it's tough sometimes with those boundaries and scheduling, and I'm getting much better. I don't schedule any calls on the weekends. I used to, because that's when my husband would be home to help with childcare. So for me, I, you know, whereas now my son's 11, he's very independent and he knows when I'm working. I try not to work when he's around, but obviously with all the pro D days and the vacation time, it happens. And he's at the stage now where he knows, you know, okay, mom, you're doing your call. That's great. He's not trying to sneak in and stick his face on the camera and ask me for snacks.
Yeah.
Now he can go do his own, because we've all had those videos where.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is a balancing act. Sarah, tell me, so let's swing back to your different revenue streams. So you have the club.
Mm-hmm.
You have your affiliates.
Yep.
You have your, we're going to talk about the directory. Is there anything else that you have for revenue streams before we
Those are definitely the two buckets, my affiliates and the club. And since the launching of the club, the percentage of my total income that is made up much more heavily by the club now. When at first started, I was making all my money from affiliates, and that proportion has kind of flipped over the time now.
Okay. Okay. So tell me about this directory. This is a new project that you've been working on. Do we want to call it a project? It sounds like quite the massive
undertaking. Yeah, it's a project. Yeah. Yeah. It feels like a project.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about the directory.
Yeah. One of my passions over the years has just been lifting up and spotlighting different individual OTs. I got to do that through the blog. I've been doing that through the podcast, but I'm like, there's too many OTs to lift up and spotlight through those means. And there's so many OTs doing good work that don't get found. And it's, you know, this, it's hard to start a business and have people find you,
especially if you are dealing with imposter syndrome and don't want to be found.
We do this to ourselves. Yeah. So I've been thinking about stuff on that level. And then I also hear this, I don't know if people say this as much in Canada as they do here, but they're like, no one knows what OT is. And we blame that on a lot of things.
That's like OT 101. I think every university has a project on, you have to educate the world on what is OT.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, that drives me. That just, I do not like that, because I'm like, that is something we can solve. We can all get together and we can show the world what OT is. We need a directory, just like Psychology Today has one, where you can go and find all the psychologists. Like, part of the reason people don't know what it is because we don't put ourselves out there, and we haven't organized to do that in like a cohesive way. So honestly, I spent a time looking at this Psychology Today directory, which is where a lot of the psychologists are, at least here in the United States. I don't know if that's the same in Canada. And on February 20th, we'll be launching an OT directory where each therapist who signs up will get a featured page. We've been testing these throughout the fall, and if all of our pages that we've tested have just like shot to the top of Google rankings. So now, Melissa, if you join and someone Googles Melissa, right on the top of Google will be this page, and it's going to be interconnected back to the directory. And it's really fun to search where you can be like health tech OTs, pelvic health OTs, OTs in Canada, has all these different search parameters. And so has a two-part purpose. One, it's going to help the public find us. Like, one of the stories from our test in the fall, one of our therapists who was on there was amazed because someone found him because someone Googled neurodiversity OT in Minnesota. And right at the top was his page. So I think it will help people find us through avenues we haven't considered before. Mm-hmm. And it will help us find each other. A lot of us are doing niche work. If you're doing something specific, I keep using pelvic health OT. We should know. Yeah, we should know all the other ones.
Pretty niche work.
Yeah, yeah. And we should know the other OTs are doing that same niche work. Or even this fall, I was talking to, it was a Jennifer in my area who works in mental health. And I was like, oh, do you know this other Jennifer OT a town over who's doing the exact same thing you're doing? And she was like, no, I've never heard of her. I'm like, what? Like we need to be leveraging our network. And I think this will help us do that.
Ah, I love this. This is really exciting. One of my questions, so speaking of niching down, so often in business, we are taught to niche down and the importance of niching down for good reason. If you're mm-hmm. going to cut through the noise there with your marketing, with your messaging, you, especially with the online work, you have to niche down unless you are intentionally being a generalist. There are people who have success being a generalist, but generally speaking, they have to. It's not being a generalist by default because you're afraid of niching down. You mm-hmm. have to look at what you're doing. And you are a great example of having success without niching down. Now, some people would argue, mm-hmm. well, you're niching down to OTs. And I would say, well, that's
yeah,
not really
that's not niche. Yeah.
You're very much a generalist. Was that something that you ever questioned if you had to be niching down more? Or did you know right from the get-go, no, I am going to focus on the OT profession as a whole?
I agree with you that the business advice is to niche down. And so many of the businesses I've seen that have grown quickly have claimed a very specific niche. But for me, I'm just a generalist at heart. Like I am not a niche person. I tend towards the big picture always. I can't help it. And so, yeah, that was always my vision, was to be a generalist. And I look at the ecosystem of OT organizations. I'm like, we need a lot of niche people we need a hippotherapy leader. We need, all these different areas, but we also need generalists in that ecosystem to help us connect things. And that's my joy and what I love. I think it is much harder to be a generalist. And just because I'm a generalist, I still have to be very clear about what I do. And I think it's a little harder to be clear when you're a generalist. So that's something that I'm always working on. That's part of why I have that set concrete schedule that I said earlier, because I have to provide clarity in other words or in other ways. Like people still need to come to your site and understand what you're doing.
Yeah. Was there ever a point on this journey? You have a lot of eyes on your work. Was there ever a point on this journey where that freaked you out a little bit in terms of visibility and in terms of the content you're putting out there and knowing how many people are seeing it? Now, I'm not sure. A lot mm-hmm. of OTs that I run into are a little bit of a perfectionist of sorts. We may or may not be a little bit type A overachievers. So is that something that you've ever struggled with?
Definitely, yes. The very concrete answer to this, and the reason why we need generalists, is because things come up that is not anyone's niche yet. Specifically, I'm thinking of when COVID hit, there was not any OT businesses that was like, here's how you deal with COVID. And my readership on my blog skyrocketed at that time because I had these systems of agility where I could really quickly start putting out COVID stuff. And I felt the weight of I'm the only one who can pivot that quickly to do it. I can pivot ahead of our national organizations and there's no other OTs that are positioned. So I felt a lot of weight then and overwhelmed by the amount of readership that I got. And looking back, I would have done a lot of things differently, probably. But that's definitely the time period in my mind that stands out of the good and weight of being a generalist.
Yes. Wow. Good old COVID.
Yes.
Good old COVID.
Yeah. I know we don't like to remember when it hit.
Well, but yeah, I was in a similar, you know, similar situation in that I had already been fully in the online space and was supporting other OTs to develop digital products and transition over to the online space, and was in a program that was all about increased visibility and growing your audience, you know, scaling 3x your audience. And I remember being on a call with my mentor at the time, and he said, you know, you are in a position to get in front of thousands of people tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And just this sense of dread. I was like, but yeah. I don't want to. I don't want to be in front of thousands of people. I'm really uncomfortable with that. And I'm going through a lot of personal stuff. And I am an open book for dozens of people. You know, put me in a kitchen party and I can be very intimate and very connected and very social. And I love to host. Put me in a group of 5,000 people and I'll find my two or three and go off to the side. Right. Like, I'm extroverted to a certain extent, but I really like my small, close-knit community. So during COVID, you know, there was a lot of like, oh, Melissa, you're perfectly set up for this. You've been doing this. You're already a full-time in the online space. And I remember I was just hyping myself up to put out, I think it was a free training, and then we got COVID. I was quite sick for 2 months, you know, this cough that just wouldn't go away. And I went, okay, maybe I'll just, you know, honor my needs and where I need to be. But on that note, you had made reference to lifting people up, using your platform to lift people up and to put a spotlight on them. And I think we need more of that, because as OTs, there are a lot of us that aren't comfortable with that increased visibility and with putting ourselves out there. It's something where many of us are, I don't want to say struggling with, but it's part of our story. It's not necessarily, you know, this white coat syndrome where we've been taught to promote the OT profession as a whole in our training versus put ourselves up on this spotlight and, hey, look at me, look at me.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important that there are people like you. And this is what I try to do in my podcast as well, where we can lift someone up, but lift them up in a way where they feel supported. It's like giving them a big hug and then gently lifting them up as opposed to, you know, shooting them out of like a rocket ship. And that was my experience with you. So when I first was venturing into the world of women's health, well, I wasn't venturing at that point. I was pretty immersed in it. And when you had interviewed me, I don't think you realized how much angst that interview caused me.
Because I remember you emailed me like 2 months later and you were like, I haven't read it yet. Or like, I haven't looked at it yet.
Oh, I had probably looked at it a lot, but you know, and there was a lot, again, a lot of imposter syndrome and really, but a lot of reflection. And, you know, the questions you had asked me, it was essentially, why am I an expert in women's health? And at that point, I had gone so deep into my women's health journey that I was opening a Pandora's box of struggles. And this idea that if I couldn't heal myself, who was I to call myself an expert or a leader in women's health? When I was discovering all the different ways where I had failed in terms of, you know, setting myself up or self-sabotage or past treatments or past advice from health professionals that I had blindly accepted and actually caused me harm. So I was going through, you know, a lot of processing that, and you had all these great questions, but it really made me do a deeper dive into, because there was so much, you know, my inner critic was screaming at me like crazy, you know, who are you to say that? But it definitely also helped to empower me in terms of seeing the history of what I had experienced and gone through and the different ways that my trainings had helped me to get where I was, but also, you know, where I was going, right? Like, it was a snapshot of that journey of where I was. And something I had to go through, you know, in terms of processing that and writing my responses. And at the same time, I was also writing my first guest blog post for one of my friends. So for Kim Bobney, who has a huge following in women's health. And that was when I realized I cannot be a writer at this stage of my life, or I'm going to be an alcoholic. Because, you know, sitting and having a glass of wine, trying to write this, trying to loosen up, like I was like, this isn't the answer. And same thing with Kim. It took me like, I joke, it was like 2 weeks and two bottles of wine to write that blog post. I'm like, this is not sustainable for me. I need to rethink this approach, which is how I ended up with a podcast and not a blog. But I think it's really important. You know, I think it's really important that we do this work in terms of lifting people up and putting the spotlight on them. And because a lot of people are, you know, it's our comfort zone, right? It's like, oh, I'm not sure I'm ready. But by you extending that invite to me, and yes, it caused a little bit of inner turmoil and, you know, I had to do a little bit of processing, but I was able to step up. Does that interview still exist? I meant to go searching for it.
I think it's still back on my blog. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go searching for that.
I'll send it to you. Yeah. I feel so lucky because I get to talk to lots of trailblazers and it is very hard to be the first person you know doing something.
Ugh, is it ever?
You were the first person I knew doing women's health. And I don't know if you knew other women's health OTs at the time.
Speaking of the online space, I wasn't very far into it. I felt pretty isolated for maybe 6 to 9 months. And then Sarah Hausler in Australia and Lindsay Vestal. So those were my first two connections, I mean, they're powerhouses in their own way, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty neat to see how we've all continued to evolve in very different ways. You know, Sarah Hausler with her private practice and the work that she's doing in terms of supporting neurodiverse adolescents through puberty. Like she's just doing some really, really, and seeing her private practice itself and the way she's building her team.
Yeah.
And then Lindsay totally going off in a different direction in terms of the work that she's doing now, primarily in the online space, but we're starting to see a shift. You know, she has her in-person summit now happening. And we've all evolved in such different ways, but they were the first two. They were the first two that gave me some sense of, I'm not totally off my rocker here. You know, this does make sense and we can do this. And they both really inspired me in different ways.
Yeah. That's really powerful for me to hear because that's something I think about a lot where even if we can find one or two kindred spirits doing something similar, like, that's a huge difference maker. You know, you don't need 100 friends doing the same thing. Like even one or two, and that's part of my vision for the directory is maybe you can just find one more person who's like one person that's like you. And then hopefully you don't have that 6 to 9 month experience that you did of feeling alone and isolated in that. Because we're much more forgiving of what other people are. We're like, oh, perfect. We hold our colleagues to different standards. So,
well, yes and no. So I want to take that a little bit further because this is a great lead in into the episode that's coming up after yours. And it's all around comparisonitis and imposter syndrome, but how we compare ourselves to others within our circle. So other OT entrepreneurs, other OTs within our niche, and the connection between our insecurities and their successes and what we can make that mean. So in your position, you are working with a lot, you are being exposed to a lot of people doing really cool things. And that's not to say you're not, but is that something that you ever do you ever struggle with that where you see what they're doing and you think, oh, should I be doing that? Should I be going more in that direction? Or wow, they are, you know, rocking it. Is that where you feel less or where you feel like you may not be doing quite enough? Or do you feel like, nah, I've got this?
This isn't quite what you're asking, but related is in my position where I'm always interviewing experts. I'm never the expert in the room. And I feel silly and insecure almost every time I broach a new topic because I don't know the language around it. I say something wrong. Before my podcast, I actually do a prep interview where I have to, like, I just ask all my silly questions right away to be like, how do you say this word that's related to your industry? And we kind of talk through things. So when in my work, I always feel uncomfortable. That's just like constant for me. But when I look at more precise to what you're asking, looking at other people who have similar things, I'm a little blessed in that because there aren't many OTs who are generalists, so I don't have that many comparisons. But I definitely have thinking of that COVID time, there were some of the OTs in my circles capitalized on that really well. And like that was a time where I was like, I was just surviving and I didn't grow my list or any, like lots of people came there, but I didn't grow my list. And yeah, so I think of it more as like, or the comparison that gets me, I guess, is looking back at like specific times I could have done things differently. And I saw my peers managing it better.
Yeah, that's, and I think that comes with being, you know, we've both been doing this for quite some time.
Yeah.
So yeah. Of course there are going to be ups and downs. Of course there are going to be hiccups. Life throws curveballs our way. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our journey in terms of personal growth and development.
Yeah.
And it's tough sometimes, you know, and I think back to when I was a pediatric therapist and, you know, my first 5 years, every time I would go to a conference or a training, I'd look back at the early stages of my peds career and think, wow, I really messed that up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought I knew what I was doing. I didn't. Or I thought I understood that assessment tool and I didn't. Or I thought I understood how to approach that, you know, specific treatment and wow, really dropped the ball on that. And it's the same thing in many ways, you know, because I'm constantly investing in my skill set, in my professional development, in my understanding, my different approach, my overall mindset. And to look back, you know, it's something I'm getting better at, to look back with compassion as opposed to with criticism. And acknowledge that, you know, and this is something, again, my mentor always instilled in me in peds. The parents you're working with are always doing the best they can, giving the resources and the support and the knowledge that they have in the moment.
Yep.
And can we apply that advice to ourselves? You know, looking back and I dropped the ball on that pretty darn good. You know, I missed that opportunity or wow, I really screwed that one up. But in that moment, you know, can I have some compassion for myself that I was doing the best that I could in that moment with the skills, the knowledge, the resource, the supports that I had in place? And it is easier to do with other people than it is with ourselves. But, you know, it's a muscle that I've been flexing more and more often. And I think that's in part why I've been able to be an entrepreneur for 10 years now, is because I've really leaned into that. And it's a big piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. That's inherent in learning, is looking back at what we were doing before and wishing we had done it, seeing how we could have done it differently. And I tried to talk explicitly a lot about that as new research is coming out too, of being like, what this is telling us is what we were doing before didn't work. And maybe we knew that and maybe we didn't. And we just learn and move forward and look back with compassion. I took a really helpful self-assessment, Kristen Neff's self-compassion quiz. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, through my women's health coaching. That was a big...
Yeah, I think that's very... I thought that was very helpful to know about yourself.
It was. And that was... So that I learned a lot from Jessica Drummond in terms of program delivery, because she, through my women's health coaching certification, we had to do a lot of assignments and a lot, we had to do sessions with master coaches and we had to do quizzes. And I love quizzes, like give me all the tests,
I do too.
But the assignments, like, okay, I have to slow down and do some self-reflection and really think about this when I like to just, you know, go hard and take all the tests. And that, so there was one on self-compassion and, you know, how we show up not only for our clients, but for ourselves. And there were a lot of very thought-provoking questions in that assignment.
Yeah.
So Sarah, as we wrap this up, so speaking of 10 years, you know, the last 10 years, but moving forward, where do you see yourself? Where do you see OT potential? Do you have a long game? Are you still figuring that out? Do you have a 10-year plan? What does the future look like for you?
Yeah, I think I look ahead into the next 5 years, and I'm definitely like, I want to just keep growing what we're doing. And in the short, like 1 to 2 years, I think that means making more redundancies in my business. Like right now, I'm the podcast host. I do a lot of the writing. If I had to go to the hospital for a whole month, there's not a great plan of what that would look like. So that's definitely like the logistics of my next year. But I guess like the vision is I just see as our world becomes more interconnected, we need more global platforms for people to meet and mobilize and to be lifting up our profession in a global sense. We've historically been so focused on like our state association, our national organization, and OT does not function in those boundaries really. I think we need more people that speak to global OT, and that's definitely a place that I want OT potential to be, where we get more people from more countries and more voices, and it's a place to collect and mobilize from.
Oh, that's really exciting. I love being inspired by other people's long-term plans. Now, I have a selfish question. What in the next year is on your radar as we are shifting to more in-person events? Are there any in-person events on the docket?
I'm going to AOTA this year. I'm going to go to my first educators conference too, hopefully next fall. I also have a classroom plan that I just launched. So I'm excited for people to start using OT potential in the classroom more. That's what's on my radar so far.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Sarah, where are you hanging out these days in terms of social media? How can people find you?
Definitely my website, otpotential.com. We would love for you to sign up for our mailing list. I've been especially attracted and active on LinkedIn lately. I don't know. I've like floated around all the different social platforms, but that's where I'm personally hanging out the most. I would love if people would subscribe to our YouTube, where we post some videos of our podcast, but also I've been doing more video interviews as well. And most importantly, I would love for people to join this directory. I cannot wait for people to be able to see our profession in this new way. And I think it will make us think about our profession differently too, to see us all gathered together. I'm just really excited for the visual of what that looks like, and pulling up our different practice areas and the geography of it, and seeing us around the world, not just OT in our one little corner of it.
Well, you have me sold. I've heard people talk about member directories and directories before, but not with your level of excitement. And thank you for explaining your why and also the vision that you have for this directory, because it is something different. It is something unique.
Yeah.
So I applaud you for that. And I'm really excited to be part of that.
Mm. I'll message you when it comes out.
Yes, please do. All right. Sarah, thank you so much for your time. It was so lovely to connect with you, and we've emailed back and forth. We've talked on social media. And again, you know, I'm really appreciative and really grateful for this platform, for my podcast. And I know you can relate in terms of your own podcast and blog in that, you know, I am able to have people on and connect and have these conversations. And yeah, it definitely fills my cup. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Melissa.
Okay. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Oh my goodness. That was such a great interview. Sarah is one of those people that I feel such a connection with, where this truly felt like a coffee date with a friend. I hope you enjoyed hearing more about her journey of going rogue, and I hope you're as excited as I am to hear more of these amazing guest interviews that we have coming up on the podcast this year.
As always, I appreciate hearing from you, and that includes any takeaways, any aha moments, or any feedback you have on the podcast. You can reach out through the contact form on our website, so we'll link it in the show notes as well. You can go to otsgonerogue.com, or you can find me hanging out these days on Instagram with the handle otsgonerogue. All right, take care, my friends, and I will see you again next week.